is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for tuning in once again. My name's JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Report radio broadcast. Today is the fourth day of March. It is Wednesday. I don't know if that means anything to you guys out there, but to me, that's the halfway mark. We've made it halfway. We're as close to the weekend as we can be and as far away from Friday as we can be. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but during the week, you know, stuff, I think that's important to remember. We're at the crux. All we have to do is get through today, and then the weekend will be right there in sight. Hope you guys are doing well out there. We started to get some snow here in Missouri again this morning. Whoever is in charge of that, if you could go ahead and flip the switch off, that would be fantastic because I am over this whole cold weather. I'm ready to get out in some sunshine. I don't know about you guys. I hope you guys are warm wherever you guys are at on planet Earth right now. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Appreciate you guys being in the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com. It's a fantastic way for you guys to follow along with all of the stuff that's going on here at Red Pill Reports. You can also go to redpillreports.com. I highly recommend you guys do that every day and check out the show section. Right at the top of the page, we'll let you know who the guest is for the day, what we're going to be talking about. And also, you can find a whole bunch of news that we aggregate from around the world and also in your neck of the woods, try and keep you guys up to date on, pretty much everything that's going on as we see it and try and keep you guys safe out there so you're not getting lied to too much. That's kind of the goal here. And in that vein, we're going to have a fairly broad discussion today with our guest. I'm very excited to be bringing James Perloff back onto the program. Many people know James. He's written a lot of great books. He's basically a historian and a researcher. But he has written also a couple of books about Darwinism. So we're going to talk a little bit today about religion and science and politics because we're basically talking about the nexus of all three of those when we start talking about the framework of Darwinism. You know, one of the things we try and do here at Red Pill Reports is really talk a lot about the idea that everything around us is essentially fraud at some level. There's, you know, we live in this matrix world, and I hate to use that, you know, coin that phrase or whatever, but that's essentially what is going on. There is a lot of layers of control that are going on all around us all the time. And one of the most important things that we can do is sometimes to step back and take a macro perspective. You know, I like looking at art. I like going to museums and seeing you know, quality pieces of art. But one of the things about quality pieces of art is that the frame is sometimes just as important as the artwork itself. And in that respect, sometimes it's important to just look at the framework through which you are looking at things. So right now, everybody's under this assumption, for the most part, that Darwinism is kind of the way it is, that we have this theory of evolution, and by making that assumption and by not questioning it ever, we're essentially led by the nose into a narrowing of thought patterns. You're basically becoming more closed-minded because we are using frameworks to focus our intents further and further down. And so here at Red Pill, we're trying to basically break those frameworks down, step back a little bit from the picture and figure out, you know, why we're being told what we're being told. And I think Darwinism is one of those things. It's just one of those frameworks that if you just blindly accept it, you can go right into, you know, Aladask's man or other animals argument and strip the rights away from people pretty easily. So again, you know, it's a slippery slope. It started with Darwinism. There's some political ramifications to it. There's definitely some spiritual and religious aspects, and there's a lot of science involved too. And I don't really know anybody that I'd rather talk to this subject. I don't know anybody I'd rather talk about this subject with than James Perloff. That's just basically where I'm at with that. So I hope you guys are looking forward to this discussion. He'll be on in about an hour. I hope you guys took a lot away from Karen's talk yesterday. Boy, I'll tell you what a powerhouse Karen Hudes is. Can't thank her enough for coming on to the program. Tomorrow's program, Greg Morris is going to be back on the show. We're going to have another in-depth discussion about the mortgage crisis. Also talk quite a bit about where Greg is at with his lawsuits and what we can all do to help that project going forward. If you guys are not up to date on what is going on with the mortgage crisis in the country, you can go to redpillreports.com and right at the top of the page, you'll see a link that says Greg Morris's petition and mortgage scandal articles, things like that. Follow that link. You will find every piece of information that you could possibly need to A, discover whether or not your mortgage has been compromised, and B, what we can do about it. Greg has initiated a massive petition campaign to essentially get as many people signed up as possible so we can go get a joint session in front of Congress and essentially bring all of this information to them, which essentially outlines the fact that all the wealth has been stolen out of our mortgages, and then all that has been funneled into illegal banks and illegal bank accounts and used for nefarious activities all around the world, some of which caused death and harm and destruction to our American troops and, you know, even civilians, innocent civilians overseas. So this is a big sticky ball of wax that we're going to be talking about tomorrow, and really hope that this egg is starting to crack, because we need to bring this as well as a whole bunch of other issues to resolution, and the only way to do that is to continue to talk about them. So I do highly recommend everybody go to the top of redpillreports.com, do some research, print those articles out, share them with your friends and family, because I guarantee you there are still people out there who don't know about this. There are still people out there who don't know about 9/11, I found out yesterday. So, you know, we have not reached saturation with any of this truthful information yet. So, again, all of us need to take it on ourselves to continue to disseminate this information. And Red Pill Reports, we've done as best as we can to get it all in one place for you. We're trying to be your, you know, daily one-stop shopping trip for your daily dose of deprogramming there and get everything you need in one spot. So anyway, all of that is at the top of Red Pill Reports. Please go sign that petition. We're looking for community leaders to really take up the gauntlet and start running with this and get more people on board and understand exactly how deep this criminal enterprise involving our mortgages actually went. So please, please, please support Greg. Be here for tomorrow's discussion. I guarantee you'll learn something, and we'll figure out where exactly we're at in this whole mess tomorrow. And then Friday, I got to tell you, is going to be a free-for-all Friday. We're going to have the crazy kids from True Stream Media and also from their show here at True Frequency Radio, Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton, amazing investigative researchers and pretty much very entertaining people. So we're going to do full 2 hours with them. We're going to go over the news and just kind of goof off for a couple hours, try and have some fun on a Friday. I really look forward to this this Friday, so I hope you guys are looking forward to that as well. Okay. Important stuff in the news going on right now. Just some bullet points before we really kind of jump in and start going over everything. The UN has thrown down the gauntlet on Israel. So that's going to have to be something that we talk about. Texas is looking at mandatory vaccinations. I do also want to touch on the national anti-vaccination petition that was only supposed to go, I believe, through February 5th on the you know, the governmental website, where if they get 100,000 petitioners, or if they get 100,000 signatures, they're actually supposed to address it. Well, they breached that level yesterday. So hopefully the nation, you know, the administration will acquiesce to people and do what they're supposed to do, which is at least have a public commentary on the fact that so many people have decided that we don't want mandatory vaccines in this country. So again, if you haven't gone and signed that petition yet, I would sign that one as well, but we'll talk about that. We've got a very important message from the Bank of Canada today. If you are up in Canada listening to the show, we have an important economic message from the Bank of Canada. The DHS bill, we've got a big update on that as well. Remember, they kicked the can back down the road on Friday last week for essentially another week. We were going to be looking at some tough decisions again this week moving into Friday, but I got a pretty big update on that. I want to give some good news to people out there who drink red wine, and it's been discovered that the Tesla automobiles, you know which ones I'm talking about there, the Tesla S, it's got a pretty cool tech secret involved, and I didn't realize that. Well, I'll just leave that one alone right now, but we'll suffice to say that Elon Musk is a massive James Bond fan. I'll leave it at that for now, and I'll get to it when we get into the tech news, but there is a very cool little Tesla secret that does involve James Bond, And we'll talk about that when we get into the tech news. But anyway, let's get into the national news here real quick. Happy to see all of you guys in the chat room. Kev Baker's in the chat room right now. Lex is in there. Just go ahead and spill the beans. Morco, Mco, that's my dad. So everybody say hi to my dad. Shark's in there. Woodwolf's in there. I believe my good friend Chef is in there as well. Thank you guys all for being in the chat room this morning. Just love having you guys in there. Super cool stuff. Super cool stuff. Okay. Speaking of not super cool stuff, let's get into the news here, guys, because there's a lot going on. The UN envoy to Israel basically yesterday threw down the gauntlet, as I mentioned. So they are calling on Israel now to investigate the killing of more than 1,500 Palestinian civilians, one-third of them being children, during the 2014 Gaza war, and to make the findings public. So why the UN has decided that we're going to put the fox in charge of the hen house and have them do their own investigation, I don't really know. This is coming out in Reuters. There's so much going on between Obama and Netanyahu and Iran right now that is all kind of behind the scenes, but is actually, there is a lot going on here. So I find this really interesting that the UN is kind of throwing the gauntlet down, because, you know, essentially what they're doing is they're saying with a pretty firm voice that from the UN perspective, Israel did not do what they were supposed to do in terms of international rules of war. It's not really a, you know, you guys are all so evil, but it just looking at the disparity between the casualty figures alone, the UN had to do something, and they have to do something right now, especially given the fact that Netanyahu's election is coming up here pretty quick. Again, Palestine has been accepted into the International Criminal Court, right? All right. Well said, Max. Noted. Israel or Palestine's already been accepted to the International Criminal Court. So again, we already know that this is all going to take place in April. There's going to be an investigation by The Hague into exactly what they're doing. So why is the UN essentially coming out and saying this? Well, I think they're just trying to fan the flames here a little bit. They do talk about the disparity again between the two casualty figures, which is pretty dramatic. I mean, we're talking about more than 2,000 Palestinians and less than 66 Israeli soldiers. That's a pretty big disparity. But this report that's coming out of the UN also talks about the fact that most of the victims on the civilian side were not bystanders on the streets. These are not people who were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, but most of the victims were actually families killed in missile strikes on their own homes, usually at night. And this comes after many, many interviews in Amman and in Cairo, or witnesses on video calls in Gaza, because, again, Israel wouldn't let any of these UN commissioners actually go to Gaza to interview people. So they've had to do a lot of this via Skype and things like that. Also bringing into focus the fact that there are still a lot of unexploded ordnances in Gaza right now. There's about 7,000 devices that still need to be defused right now. Some 100,000 people still remain displaced, and 450,000 right now are disconnected from water and electricity. So that's what's going on. I find it a little interesting that the UN is kind of jumping the gun on the international court to ask Israel to investigate itself. But maybe they're giving Israel an opportunity to save face here right now. And I'll tell you, Netanyahu, with the holes that he has been digging lately, I think could probably use a little bit of face saving right now. Netanyahu obviously was speaking to Congress yesterday, in this widely disputed whether or not he should have been here at all, or whether or not, he was going to say anything that was valid or had any reasoning behind it. But, Netanyahu was speaking to Congress yesterday. He essentially came out and said that, the Iranian government is basically the Nazi regime. He says Iran's regime is not merely a Jewish problem any more than the Nazi regime was merely a Jewish problem then. So again, Netanyahu kind of throwing down the gauntlet on Iran during this speech yesterday, also saying essentially he's saying that this accord that we're reaching with Iran between the United States is going to pave the way to them achieving nuclear weapons. I just want to put it back out there again that they assigned the nuclear treaty. Israel has not. Israel has more than 100 nuclear weapons. United States also has not signed the non-nuclear proliferation treaty. So Iran is. And at the same time that Netanyahu is here in the United States essentially saying that Iran is evil, and we still have these. It's unusual to me that he would come out, Netanyahu would come out a week after these cable leaks, essentially showing that the Mossad was passing on faulty information to the nuclear inspectors for a long, long time now. When we had that story that the nuclear inspectors were essentially going to have to take a big step back and say, wow, we've developed this whole sanctioning program based on information that we got from Mossad, and according to the internal leaks now between Mossad and the SSA, we know that information was fake. So now, again, Netanyahu coming up in front of Congress saying, again, Iran bad, they're going to have a nuclear weapon. He actually says within a matter of weeks. Meanwhile, yesterday, a coalition force of 30,000 Iraqis basically came and kicked major crap against Tikrit. That's what happens. And you know who was helping them? You know, okay, let's make a list of the people who weren't helping them first. United States, not there. UK, not there. Who was there? Iran. Yeah. So Iran, supposedly the bitter enemy of the entire Middle East there, working hard with, I mean, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. Iraq and Iran, they don't get along. We know that. That's historically accurate. But there we go. Their common enemy, again, ISIS and coalition forces working. Let's talk about Tikrit real quick. There's some news coming out of Iraq this morning. We're trying to watch what's going on. Obviously, this battle in Tikrit is huge, huge news because, again, 30,000 actual Iraqi troops after being trained by the United States. There's no coalition real involvement other than Iraq and Iran right now. And so really kind of showing a little bit of the true colors of Iran, in my opinion, just my opinion. But on Tuesday, the Security Committee and the Council of Salahuddin announced that the security forces have besieged the city of Tikrit from three axes. So they are working now towards progressing towards the center. So the vice chairman of the committee said that in an interview again for Iraqi News yesterday, security forces of the Iraqi army, the police, the Al-Hashd al-Shabi, and tribal fighters. Again, there's a lot of militia going on. A lot of people are just fed up with what's going on in Iraq right now. So the populace is really standing up, and that's where this whole thing is coming from, and why I think we're really starting to see the unity of Iraq shining through here. And all, man, I got to come back to this whole being supported by Iran thing. That is just remarkable. But again, they managed to besiege the city from three axes. They've got the southern tip, the western hub, and they've also got a third axis on the north. So they are now essentially surrounding the ISIS forces there, and they're moving towards the city center. I would imagine it's probably like 7 o'clock p.m. right now in Baghdad. So I'm not sure what's going on there currently right now this minute. But it does look like that massive initiative against Tikrit yesterday was successful. And then in an ancillary note, too, just to keep talking about the coalition that's actually formed right now and what's going on in Iraq, Turkey yesterday actually provided two C-130 type military planes. They landed at an airbase yesterday and provided more military equipment and coalition supervisors for this initiative against Tikrit. So now the battle is going to be Tikrit, and then they're going to move on to Mosul. And I imagine Mosul will be a little bit longer of a battle. It's a much larger city, and it's definitely an enclave right now. But I would hope, and this is kind of just my hope, that inside of Iraq, people are starting to realize that they can fight these ISIS people out, and that hopefully this battle in Tikrit will bolster the courage of the people in Mosul to stand up and say enough is enough, and you know, Iraq will get their country back. That's kind of what we're all hoping for right now. In a little story that kind of went unreported last week, and in relation to what is going on with Ukraine and Russia and the United States and Poroshenko and blah blah blah, China actually stepped up last week and made a few comments that did not get picked up by the mainstream news, but I did want to just kind of bring this up. The guys at InfoWars actually dug this stuff up. China's ambassador to Belgium, which is, again, the capital of the EU, said that the nature and the root cause of the Ukrainian conflict is, quote-unquote, the West, and that the West should abandon the zero-sum mentality and take real security concerns of Russia into consideration. By real security concerns, he's clearly referring to the NATO's expansion right up to the Russian border and America's surrounding Russia with military bases, now increasingly including the most strategic of Russia's bordering countries, the Ukraine. In other words, this diplomat from China basically says the West has a zero-sum attitude towards Russia, and instead of seeking to move forward with an approach in which neither side among nuclear powers benefits at the other's expense, the entire world moves forward together. So this is essentially a direct criticism of Barack Obama and all of the pro-Obama, anti-Putin EU leaders. It's also an implicit repudiation of Obama's having repeatedly referred to the U.S. as the one indispensable nation, which is another example of that phrase can be found all over the internet if you just look for it. But Obama keeps saying every other nation except the U.S. is dispensable, and he clearly thinks that Russia is. It's not really an insult. It's more of a provocation, virtually asking for a fight. And for what? Just for nuclear power? Anyway, so it's important to say, too, that this, although this criticism did not come from top echelon of China's leadership, it would not have come out at all if they had not approved of it in advance, because that's just how China works. So essentially, China is telling Barack and the West to stop it, both in word and in deed. We'll see if they follow suit. Again, most of us now believing that we are hedging our bets towards war pretty specifically there. Moving on here, I want to talk about Greece right now. Greece is discussing a third bailout package with the European Union worth somewhere between 30 and 50 billion euros, according to the Spanish economic minister. Greece and EU officials deny discussions are taking place. So right now, again, the Greece and the EU officials are denying that there is a third bailout package being discussed, but Spain has come out pretty specifically and says that that they actually are, and they're getting a lot of pressure from Spain and Portugal, because those are the next two nations that are going to be really affected by contagion if Greece decides to go. So although, again, we're not really out of the woods yet in Greece, and it does seem pretty evident to me that, I don't know, they're going to go down the tubes. That's what I think. I think what's going to happen is that they're going to agree to these austerity measures again, and the popular uprising is going to happen, and Athens is just going to burn to the ground, because I can't imagine these people being toyed with any more than they already have been. I feel so sorry for everybody out here in the world now. I'm so sick to death of the corporate bankster cartels and all of the ready for it to be over. Okay, two more drones. No, ten more drones been spotted over Paris. And reports say police are searching for four men after a chase east of the city. So I think this is becoming a new sport in Paris right now. I think trying to just fly a drone and get away with it seems like something I would do if I was in college and I lived anywhere near Paris right now. But again, flying drones over the capital, banned without a license, and you can't fly them at night anywhere in the city at all. Last week, I think we talked about the five drones that were discovered flying over, specific Eiffel Tower, things like that, other real important landmark type areas. Earlier in the year, there had been some seen flying around some nuclear facilities, which is why this new rules have gone into effect recently. And just as a follow-up, also, we had those three Al Jazeera reporters who were arrested last week for flying a drone. It was speculated that they were going to get the maximum fine, which was ridiculous. I think it was something like 85,000 euros, but only the actual pilot was fined, and he was only fined 1,000 euros. So again, 1,000 euros is still a lot just for flying a drone. But the police last night did in fact find a drone, or see a drone flying from one of their vehicles, and they chased it, but they couldn't find it because they got caught in traffic. And then they eventually believe they saw some guys get the drone and jump into a car and drive away. So was it students? Is it terrorists? I don't know. But again, Paris right now is up in arms about these drones flying around. And I just thought I'd point that out in case you guys were bored and wanted to go mess with the police in Paris, because it'd be fun to do. If I was there, I would do it. Heck, why not? I mean, it's stupid. Especially you can just, this reporter guy, he got caught and only paying $1,000. Seems like a good game to me. Okay. Also, news out of Mexico. This is kind of a big story, actually. Omar Morales, he is known as Z42. He is the head of the Zetas cartel, the Zeta cartel leader. Again, he was arrested just this morning down in Monterrey, which is the northern state of Nuevo León, according to police there. He is said to have been running the cartel, the Zeta cartel, since 2013, saw the arrest of his brother Miguel. And the arrest comes days after Mexican police also captured another suspected drug lord, Servando Gomez. Mr. Gomez was the leader of the Knights Templar cartel in the Michoacan state. And Morales is wanted in the United States and Mexico on charges of drug trafficking, kidnapping, and murder. The Zetas cartel is believed to be behind some of the bloodiest crimes carried out by the Mexican drug gangs. So that's two major, major drug gang arrests in Mexico going down in the last 48 hours. I wonder what in the world is going on there, because that is that's big news coming out of Mexico. I hope they are absolutely. I mean, I'm sure that the president there has been under the gun after the kidnapping of all of those students, and realizing that there was so much collusion between some of the lower members of, of important, well, it was the mayor. I mean, I don't know what you want to call that, but the, important members of elected officials there colluding with these drug cartels. Obviously, it's been going on for a very long time, and the national uproar about those 42 missing student teachers probably leading a lot to the president saying, wow, we really need to get this under control. He was talking about dismantling all of the national or the federal police forces there and basically starting over from the ground up. And now we've seen these two major arrests in the last 48 hours. I don't know. Mexico looks like they're turning around quite a bit. I think that's pretty interesting stuff there. A little news out of Paraguay right now, too. Paraguay looks to be the next nation that is going to try to completely legalize marijuana. So following on the footsteps of Uruguay and the success that they've had, a high-profile Paraguayan senator has called for marijuana decriminalization in the landlocked South American country in a bid to put the drug traffickers to their business to bed. So I'm totally in support of that. And it's nice to see, it's not the first time it's been suggested in Paraguay, but this particular guy that's suggesting it is chair of the National Congress. So this is the first time that a really, really big, proponent or, political person there in Paraguay has actually suggested this. So maybe this one will, get some legs and grow. We shall see. Let's move on to some, national news here real quick. Oh, Obsidian, the Mexicans can go back home. I don't know. You know, I've heard a lot of rumor recently about the peso going to becoming a silver-backed currency. So I don't know. I might be wanting to go down to Mexico. It's going to be a lot better than the United States here, I think, coming up in September, Obsidian. We're just having a little chat room chat here right now, guys. And let me move on to national news. Obviously, the fallout from Netanyahu's speech did not get lost on the president yesterday. Come on, computer, work with me here. Let's get that opened up. There we go. Obama did not listen to the speech. He apparently scheduled a an international meeting via teleconference with some European officials. Whoa, I'm hearing some bumper music right now, ladies and gentlemen. I'm supposed to have three more minutes, but I don't know what's happening. So we might potentially be going to a break right now, guys. So I guess that's what we'll do. When we come back, we'll talk some more about the news, what's going on in the national news. We've got some health stuff and some tech stuff going on as well. So keep it right here. We'll be back in a few minutes, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Within Radio with Tom Barnes and Tommy Whitgate.
Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, perhaps, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that sneaky 3-minute break. That snuck up on me. I wasn't paying attention to the clock, I guess. Apologize for that, guys. Appreciate you guys being in the chat room today. It's very nice to have you guys along for the ride. If you guys are wanting to listen to the show and get involved with the chat room, you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and get involved right there. Very cool stuff happening in the chat room, as usual. Okay, talking about Barack Obama's response to Netanyahu's little speech yesterday. Again, Barack Obama did not attend the speech. He went to some kind of international meeting that was happening via teleconference that they had suggested that he was more important to him. So again, he read the transcript that Netanyahu gave and essentially came back and said that Netanyahu really didn't offer any real alternatives to the ongoing negotiations over Iran's nuclear program during his address to the U.S. Congress on Tuesday. Obama said there was nothing new from Netanyahu during his controversial speech. He also added that Netanyahu's speech was not materially different from the one the prime minister gave back in 2013 when he criticized even an interim nuclear deal between U.S., Iran, and other negotiating nations. In his congressional address, Netanyahu said a deal with Tehran would all but guarantee that Iran would have capability to build nuclear weapons possibly within weeks is what he said. So Tehran, also taking a little bit of offense to that, said Netanyahu's speech was essentially boring and repetitive. And they go on to say the speech today by the Zionist regime prime minister was boring and repetitive and part of the hardliners' election campaign in Tel Aviv. I could not agree more with that. Tehran again said it's pursuing nuclear energy program for civilian uses and not for the aim of producing weapons. Iran's nuclear program is legal. Again, is legal under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, to which Israel is one of the few United Nations members that is not a signatory. So there you go. That was a response to that. And then it came out also report late Monday night. Now, again, we got to take all this stuff with a grain of grain of salt because this is a report coming out of the Israeli national news. So you're starting to see the rhetoric not only being ramped up between Obama and Netanyahu beforehand, but now the fallout is there and Barack has basically come out and said Netanyahu didn't really say anything, you know, productive or effective. Now Israeli National News is releasing a report saying that the cooperation between Israel and American intelligence agencies, which until now has aided the International Atomic Energy Agency in formulating its reports on Iran's nuclear program, reports that advanced the sanctions against the Islamic regime. So let me back up because I don't think I said that very well. Up until right now, the Israeli and American intelligence agencies have been working together with the IAEA in formulating that group's reports on Iran's nuclear program. And that report that we're talking about has been what the IAEA has used to build its framework for sanctions against Iran, okay? So at the moment, while Iran is cooperating with various countries in terms of intelligence on Iran's nuclear program, The cooperation with the United States has apparently stopped as of Monday this week. In closed conversations, senior sources in the White House have expressed concerns that Netanyahu will reveal details that Obama has kept secret from the nuclear deal being sealed with Iran. So again, thinking that the two intelligence agencies are working to counter purposes at this point. So now, again, more fallout from from the souring relations that are going on between the United States and Israel right now. And so the intelligence communities apparently are not going to be colluding anymore, and certainly not in relation to this nuclear deal that's being brokered between the United States and Iran, as well as a whole bunch of other countries. So that's what's going on right now. The fallout continues, and I think that the souring of the relationship between Netanyahu and Barack Obama is all but assured at this point. So we'll see what happens going forward. We wanted to talk also about the DHS bill. Remember, they had kicked that can down the road towards this Friday, is coming down to another big, you know, make it or break it type decision at Friday at midnight. Well, they didn't do that. They didn't do that at all. They actually sent Barack Obama a bill to fund the Department of Homeland Security through the end of the budget year, and they did not, I repeat, they did not overturn the president's immigration policies. So despite all the rhetoric from Boehner coming out and saying, you know, we need an ancillary bill to deal with these two issues and we want to separate them, they didn't do that. They basically said yesterday that they're going to just send it along to Barack Obama. So essentially, the Republicans, after all of the browbeating and the we are so good and we are so tough and we're not going to let him get away with anything, and basically just cowered under and said, let him do whatever he wants. So they are going to fund DHS. The inclusion of the funding for the president's immigration policies has been included, and everybody is expecting that Barack will probably sign that now. And it is also important to note that that injunction against funding all of the all of these non-deportations, that injunction still stands out of Texas right now. But apparently the DHS went ahead and followed Barack Obama's mandate to the tune of about 100,000 individuals that were not deported, who should have been, and they were released up until that injunction took effect. So that's a report that I just saw this morning. But again, we're going to be funding DHS, so thank God for that, I guess, right? Jeez Louise, what a country we live in. Do we want to talk about Hillary anymore? Should we talk a little bit more about Hillary after her this big disclosure about her using private email yesterday? A lot of people are really upset about this. Obviously, personal email accounts to conduct government business is not good, especially if you're operating as Secretary of State. Pretty apparent violation of federal requirements that require her records to be retained. So, we're moving forward into this new millennium campaign. And what is it that people want to see more than anything right now out of any political candidate? It is transparency, it's inspiration, innovativeness, and you have to be beyond ethical reproach. I think all of those things we can just go ahead and tick off of Hillary's list right now, because the idea that she was using a private email account to deal with state business is crazy. If you think about it, really, she exposed confidential and potentially dangerous information to a non-secure and commercial email system. She gave Chinese spies a better shot at reading her emails than she's given to U.S. taxpayers. And that's not conjecture. That's really honest to God what happened. So, are her hopes of becoming president being dashed by all this? Man, I hope so. I hope people are paying attention to just how awful this woman is, because I'm really fearful that her name recognition is going to get her pushed into office, and I'm really fearful that people will figure out how awful she is and vote for Jeb, because either of those situations is just a really bad deal as far as I can tell. There was a shooting last night. No, was it last night or this morning? Hang on a second. Let me get the article back up here. But downtown L.A., apparently three masked suspects, they're now in custody, but they allegedly came out and started firing at LAPD officers in South L.A. Nobody really knows that much about this investigation, because the details are very small. There aren't even reports on whether or not the police recovered a weapon. So these three masked suspects, again, arrested South Los Angeles as of this morning for firing on officers. But in the same report, they're saying they couldn't find the weapons. So I don't understand what that's about. It makes me wonder, A, if it has anything to do with the homeless man that was gunned down, or if it's just more retaliation for, or if it's just more idiots doing stupid things. I'll tell you what, gunning down police officers, not the way to bring about change in this country right now. We've got a lot of better options on the table. Speaking of better options on the table, here's another InfoWars report that Steve Watson did about this little town in Texas that has proven now that there is a solution to stop out-of-control cops. It has fired essentially its entire police department, and because of that, they have seen a crime drop of 61%. They basically went to private security forces, a lot like what Dale Brown does up in Detroit, another guy that we can't support enough around here at Red Pill Reports. But that's essentially what they did. So this is Sharpstown, which is located in southwest Houston. It decided in 2012 that regular public policing was proving wholly ineffective and opted not to renew a contract with the constable's office. Instead, the town's civic leaders hired private security agents with the company SEAL, which is SEAL Security Solutions, and devised a more effective policing strategy. Since they have been in there, and this is according to the SEAL Security Solutions, an independent crime study has been done, and they show that they have reduced crime by 61% just in 21 months, and that is an estimated slashing of criminal activity by almost two-thirds in just over a year and a half. Alexander, who is the spokesman for the SEAL director, he is the director of the operations for SEAL, he believes that the reason for such a dramatic drop has come with more sensible policing in areas that need it most. So they don't do, he says they do directed patrols, meaning they don't just put an officer out there and say, here, go patrol. They look at crime stats and they work off those crime stat sheets, to make sure officers are in the area. They also believe that officers should spend a lot less time filing paperwork and actually spend more time engaging the public efficiently for safety and for the safety of the community. So again, it looks like this little town in, outside of Houston there, heard about Dale Brown and said, man, we could probably do that. Also, as a little ancillary note, they're saving $200,000 a year by doing this thing that they're doing. So they've reduced crime and they are saving a whole bunch of money right now. So I love it. I love it. That's what we need. We need altruistic police. I think, you know, get rid of all law enforcement. Let's replace them with voluntary peace officers. The voluntary fire department seemed to work really well. And you know what's also really interesting, if you think about firefighters and EMTs, they really just kind of sit in one place and wait till something happens to go after it. They're not out in the street trying to cause problems. They're not harassing homeless people or shooting them in L.A. Just makes me crazy. Anyway, let's move on. A little note about the Supreme Court right now. They are set to hear a second argument against Obamacare. Right now it comes down to whether or not some wording in the Obamacare legislation is concise enough. I don't think this particular legal case is going to go anywhere. But what they're essentially challenging right now is the fact that there are a whole – okay. They essentially decided in this legislation, the Obamacare legislation, to give, subsidies for people who signed up for state-run insurance organizations, right? And that's really what the language in the document actually says. It says they're only, able to get these subsidies if they're buying insurance, from exchanges that were quote unquote established by the state. But right now, there's actually 13 states and the District of Columbia that have set up such exchanges, but the other 34 are run by the federal government, and three of them are operating as kind of these quasi-state federal hybrids. So right now, the question is, do the people who have signed up through the state sites that are run by the federal government and the three operating as these, you know, state, federal, quasi, whatever, whether or not they're basically allowed to get these subsidies? That's what it comes down to. So essentially, I don't think anything is going to come from this, but I just wanted to point it out that it is going to go in front of the Supreme Court. It's scheduled for an oral argument starting at about 10 o'clock. And I think that is today, but the ruling is not scheduled until the end of June. So we won't really know what's going on with this until then, but perhaps there'll be somebody in the crowd who can give us some insight once this hearing is over. And I want to give a little bit of kudos to a Texas lawmaker right now, too. A Texas lawmaker has now introduced a bill to finally legalize marijuana in the Lone Star State. But it is the way he is going about doing it that I really like, and that's why I want to point this out as soon as my computer will cooperate with me and put the article back up in front of me. But essentially, what he is trying to do is strike any language that has to do with the psychoactive plant from any legislation that exists in Texas at this point. That is what he is going after. He goes on to say that everything that God made is good, even marijuana. This is Representative David Simpson, who is a Republican from Longview, and he is the one who filed the bill. He says the conservative thought is that government doesn't need to fix something. if God made it good. The 24-page bill begins, the following provisions are repealed, and then it lists dozens of Texas statutes related to marijuana, and if the legislature were to approve the bill, pot in Texas would be regulated like any common crop. The reason I like it is because he basically is speaking common sense here. He's saying everything that God made is good, and the fact that we've got a conservative guy in Texas standing up and saying, wow, we really need to do something about this, that's good news. So I hope people can support Mr. David Simpson down there and also support this bill as it moves through the legislative process, because, again, man, I just can't imagine the freedom that that's going to bring to people across the planet if we can finally get out from under these draconian drug laws, because they are just ridiculous. Okay, let's move on to some economic news right now. Still lots to talk about today. The Dow is down about 100 points, sitting at 18,104 right now. S&P also following suit, but still well above the 2000 mark at 2096. Dollar index is, wow, holy cow, high. It's up again. Man, what is going on in this crazy world? 96.04 at the dollar index right now. Let's just jump over to the Forex and figure out, holy cow. Well, we've been watching the euro, ladies and gentlemen. We've been watching the euro start to feel some of the effects of what happened in Austria the other day. We're not out of the woods in Greece right now, but the euro to dollar is down almost another percent today at 110, 1.107. I was wondering today if we would see 1.10, but that is a very low mark for the euro. And I'll tell you what, it's very unusual too. Gold right now doesn't seem to have a lot of panic buying. It doesn't seem to be a lot of people jumping into gold. Gold hovering right around 1201, silver sitting at 16 and 18. But if you jump over back to the Forex, this struck me as kind of unusual. Bitcoin, a lot of safe haven buying going on in Bitcoin right now. We're sitting at 278. That's up, you know, almost $75 from where we were just a week ago. That seems to be the only place that I can actually pinpoint any type of safe haven buying going on in the markets right now. And that to me is just, go figure that one out, boys. Chef, you got an idea on that one? I don't know. Let's talk also, we'll get the BDI index. I believe the BDI was up again this morning. Again, the Chinese New Year coming to an end. People starting to ship goods and start producing things again. Now, 5.53 is where the BDI index, again, up another $5 today. If Truth is out there listening right now, maybe he'll pop into the chat room and give me an updated number here before the end of the day. But that is what's going on with the BDI. Still starting to see some effects of the shipping coming back online. So that is good. Let's talk about Ukraine and the economy there right now. It might be a good time to jump into the hryvnia because it is down about 50% over the last couple of weeks. But confidence in the Ukrainian government is effectively collapsing right now. The price of food soaring as people now believe their currency will buy less and less with each passing day. And wouldn't you know it, they are correct. The hryvnia now has fallen below 4 cents U.S. Like the German hyperinflation, here too, we see people trying to spend their money on food as soon as they get it. To quiet the protests over food, President Poroshenko ordered the Ministry of Food to reserve, to fill the shelves of stores with flour, sugar, canned meat, and buckwheat from the reserve. The trouble is there was no reserves left. So again, stores there starting to become empty. There are some that are calling this financial Maidan for... Some are calling this the financial Maidan, for it was the a protest stage in the National Bank of Ukraine to protest the crash of the hryvnia currency and the resulting impoverishment of masses of food as the, or masses of people as the food prices began to rise. Earlier in the day, Kiev Mayor Klitschko accused demonstrators of being Russian provocateurs and expressed puzzlement as to the cause of the protests. Obviously, that guy has no problem getting food over there, but then he unleashed riot police on demonstrators, and confidence in the Ukrainian government again. We're watching it collapse right now. So what actually happened? Well, when the Ukrainian government collapsed, other nations froze the accounts of the Ukrainian politicians, the oligarchs who had stolen much of the money from the country. The nations were many, such as Austria, right? The EU froze money as well. However, it appears now that there is the function, there is further corruption for accounts that were frozen, are now being mysteriously unfrozen. So many of the Yanukovych supporters are still running the country, and apparently there are still some under the deal, under the table deals going on to unfreeze money provided to the Ukraine supporting the EU. So again, what they're talking about is that There's a lot of fistfights going on in Parliament right now, and people are trying to figure out why. It's because when the Ukrainian government collapsed, a lot of the oligarchs, the people who were there, senior parliamentary leaders, didn't leave. They're still there. They're still running the country. So we're seeing a lot of fistfights happening because a lot of those leaders were the oligarchs that were storing a lot of money in the Ukraine. When the Yanukovych government collapsed, all of those funds were basically frozen. But we're starting to see now that as the senior military and senior parliamentary officials there in the Ukraine are kind of working under the table with the EU, some of their accounts are being unfrozen. So people who are watching that closely are calling shenanigans, essentially. So lots of fistfights happening there. Riots in the streets, the hryvnia down to 4 cents, and low food on the shelves. Seems like a great time to go and visit the Ukraine right now, does it not? Let's keep talking about that for just a second, because they essentially passed a ginormous austerity package yesterday. More bad news coming down for the people in Ukraine. $17.5 billion IMF bailout, and it is going to come with a very tough austerity package for the people of the Ukraine. Just absolutely ridiculous. They passed this Monday morning in an extraordinary meeting with a majority of 273 votes, which is well above the 226 necessary to pass any kind of legislation there. But let's see what is going to be happening. Pension cuts for retired people, that's going to be a 15% pension cut. So moreover, pension payments for people working in the tax, customs, and regulatory bodies are going to be suspended. So if you're a person working, again, in the tax, customs, or regulatory bodies, no more pension for you. Job tenure for people working in hazardous and heavy industries will be gradually increased from 20 to 25 years for men, 15 to 20 years for women. The amended budget provides for an increase of the rent charged for gas production from 20% to 70%. At the same time, Ukraine's National Commission responsible for controlling energy and utilities has more than doubled the cost of gas to average consumers, and now gas used for heating will jump 230%. The gas used for cooking, again, also jumping about that much. So obviously Ukraine undergoing serious political and economic constraints right now in the public sector. And in fact, the country is really on the verge of default at this point. So authorities hope that the situation can be improved by the means of foreign borrowing. What does that mean? Well, that means that Ukraine yesterday increased their increased their interest rates from 17% to 30%. And we actually did see a boost in the value of the hryvnia as a result of that. But again, how long that bounce is going to last, it just remains to be seen. But again, I'm sorry, they were at 19.5%, and they raised them the refinancing rate to a stunning 30% as of yesterday. So again, value of the hryvnia did pop up as a result of that. But in more bad news, the fourth largest bank in Ukraine is called Delta Bank. They are officially, as of this morning, insolvent. This is, the fourth largest bank in the Ukraine. Delta Bank has gone bankrupt after months of noncompliance, according to the National Bank of Ukraine. And two smaller banks in the Delta Banking Group have also gone belly up. So I don't know. I mean, this is stage one, right? We go in, you destroy the economy, you destabilize the economy, and then you drive down the cost of their currency. Now it's driven down to about 4 cents. Again, might be a good time to look into picking up some hryvnia. I don't know. Let's move on here. We talked about the bail-in that essentially occurred in Austria. That was not conjecture. It is still going on. The bondholders at the banks, the bad bank that they used to try and unravel some of the bad securities and derivatives that they had, went way worse than bad yesterday or the day before. They discovered, a $7.6 billion hole in the Austria's bad bank. We're talking about Hedda Asset Resolution AG. And so essentially the bondholders now on the hook for all of that, because that's pretty much the rule across the EU right now. So that's what's going on there, too. Oh, and I promised you an important economic insight or economic message from the Central Bank of Canada, BDI at 5:59. Thank you, Carolina Girls. BDI still on the rise this morning, ladies and gentlemen. So happy days are here again. Again, important message from the Central Bank of Canada to the citizens of Canada. I wanted to make sure I get this out, because did you guys know that around the world, pretty much around the world, it's illegal to deface your money? You can't draw pictures on your money. Well, apparently that's not illegal in Canada. So after the death of Leonard Nimoy last year, I didn't get an opportunity to stop and say how sad I was when I found out that Leonard Nimoy had died. But As a result of Leonard Nimoy's death, there has been a new trend occurring across the Canadian provinces there called Spocking, and they are essentially defacing the Canadian $5 note by superimposing the likeness of the half-Vulcan doctor onto the image of the former Prime Minister Sir Winfrid Laurier. And there's actually quite a resemblance, and it's really not a lot of art required to make such a transformation possible, again, making the former Prime Minister into the beloved Dr. Spock. But because it's been going on so much recently, the Bank of Canada decided that they wanted to ask people to stop doing it. They say, yes, it's very much legal to draw on your money if you want to, but it's not very nice and it's not a very Canadian thing to do. I'll tell you, you should do some searches for some of the stuff that's done to the American dollar bills. I will say that it is definitely illegal to face the Federal Reserve notes, because they, again, they're a foreign currency here in our country and they're private property of a bank. But I've seen George Washington turned into Skeletor, and it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. But anyway, Canada does acknowledge the fact that it is legal to draw Spock on their money up there, but they are asking people to stop doing it. So I'm just passing on that person, that very important, note for the Canadians there. Very interesting, very funny stuff going on. I like that. Lots of other countries are doing it around the world as well. There's been some pretty amazing drawings coming out of the Greece situation, and I won't get into those right now, but if you wanted to go to redpillreports.com, you can find this article, I believe, there. Just funny stuff. So again, Canadians, Canada's central bank asking you guys to stop defacing your dollars and stop making them look like Spock. So there you go. They're also releasing the polymer notes here in, where is it, at the end of November this year, so you won't be able to do it anymore. But just a heads up, the Sharpie markers still work on the polymer notes. I don't know if Canada knows that or not, but just putting that out there. Let's see, Target is going to be firing a whole bunch of people right now, it looks like. The Bank of England currency chief has been arrested now for meddling in foreign currency funds. So that's a big deal. Probably ought to talk about that a little bit. We're just getting ready to go to a break, so I'm trying to cover all the stuff that I teased you guys about with earlier. I do want to talk about this Tesla thing, because I think this is pretty cool. Apparently, Elon Musk, again, big fan of the James Bond series. So if you have a Tesla S, on the dashboard, there is a secret Easter egg. An Easter egg is kind of an internet term for something cool that's hidden that you kind of have to discover. And so anyway, if you hold down the T button on the entertainment system, you will trigger a prompt from your Tesla S that will ask you if you would like to turn your car into the Lotus Esprit car/submarine combo from the 1977 Roger Moore outing, The Spy Who Loved Me, including a drop-down menu that maxes out at, naturally, 20,000 leagues under the sea. So needless to say, your Tesla is not actually equipped with the submersible capabilities, so please avoid driving into a lake anywhere near you. But again, if you push down the T button on the entertainment system, you'll trigger a prompt for an access code. Obviously, I probably don't have to tell you guys what the access code is. 007. Then the display, which normally shows the image of the Tesla, will then shed, feature a picture of the Lotus Esprit /car/submarine from the combo from the movie 1977 Roger Moore movie, The Spy Who Loved Me. I love it. I think that's super cool. I love Elon Musk. I'll tell you what, I think that guy is going places. Gotta go to a break. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
You're listening to the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Back to the program. I'm sorry about that. Clearing my throat there, guys. Trying to wet my whistle here. We're reaching out to Mr.
Hey,
James.
Jim.
Hey, James. How are you doing this morning, buddy?
I'm doing good. I still don't get that Skype connection or any kind of online connection, so I guess we'll have to go with the phone.
Yeah, we're on the phone right now, and we are just coming back from the break. I just want to appreciate, James, you coming onto the program. I know we're having a little bit of a technical issue. I think your connection sounds fine, so we'll just kind of carry on from here. Folks, for those of you guys who don't know Mr. James Perloff, I'll tell you what. There's not a smarter guy in the industry. He is a researcher, a scholar, somebody who really digs into the details when it comes to history and things like that. He's written a lot of great books. My very favorite of the collection, obviously, is Truth as a Lonely Warrior. And I got to tell you, James, I was reading last night. I've been reading David Icke's, I think it's The Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to Solve It. And wouldn't you know it, quotes from you and your Truth as a Lonely Warrior appeared in that book. And I just thought, man, it just made me really happy when I'm reading an author that I respect and another author that I respect shows up in that book. And then it happens to be an author that I get to be, you know, fortunate enough to speak with so often. It's just, it's really cool to see the respect that you get throughout the industry from all of the other people that we respect here. So ladies and gentlemen, for those of you guys who don't know, again, he's a freelance author. He's contributed to the New American Magazine since about 1986. His first book, The Shadow of Power, exposed the private influence on American foreign policy and has sold over 100,000 copies. He's been a guest on well over 100 different radio shows, television programs. He's joined us here on a couple of different occasions, and we'd like to consider him to be a regular guest. James, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us this morning.
Well, thank you for providing this venue for me and a whole bunch of other truthers to get the message across about what's happening in our world.
Well, it's my pleasure to do it. And again, that's kind of the whole name of the game here. And I'm glad that you brought that up today because, you know, normally when you come onto the program or when we host articles that you have written, they have a lot to do with sort of the shadow control mechanisms. There's always a lot of banking influences on war and things like that. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to go learn some things, you can go to redpillreports.com and go to the learn section. And there are a lot of things that James has actually written that we are hosting there because, again, the in-depth detail that you go into when you're looking at some of the collusion between the bankers and the warmongers and things like that, second to none in the world. You know, your ability to point out false flags going way back in history is second to none in the world again. And so one of the things that we try and do here at the Red Pill Reports is is really try and look at the frameworks also through which we look at things, because it's very important, you know, I'm sure you agree with me, to kind of look at the pinpoint stuff to say, okay, well, this is a problem, the dollar is fake, the Fed is fake and things like that. But at the same time, there are so many subtle frameworks that the powers that be have kind of put in place, that unless you really step back and take an opportunity to look at the framework, it's difficult to really see how a framework itself can make you narrow-minded. You know what I mean? And that's why I wanted to bring you onto the program today, because I think one of these frameworks that people take for granted is this idea of the theory of evolution. It's one of those things that has been kind of pushed into our skulls from a very young age in terms of our schooling and things like that. And we take it just kind of as an actual fact. But you've got a couple of fantastic books, Tornado in a Junkyard and The Case Against Darwin, both of which do a really good job of looking at the science behind Darwinism, the effects that Darwinism has once you start using it as a framework to define your world. And so, you know, that's what we really want to do today. Bringing together the two different ideas of politics and religion, or the three ideas, politics, religion, and science, and trying to find that nexus between them. James, where do you think the most appropriate place to start a conversation about Darwinism would be?
Definitely it's political and social relevance, because for a lot of people, including perhaps some of your listeners, a lot of people think that Darwin's theory of evolution is just a biological theory, and therefore it belongs in a classroom. And why in the world would J.D. Moore and James Pearl ever want to talk about something as boring as that?
Right.
And so I want to start by talking about the relevance of Darwin's theory. It completely changed the way we look at ourselves in the Western world. And the way we used to look at ourselves was, we were a Christian culture, and so people, having read the Bible and being devout in their Christianity, many of them, viewed the heavens and the earth as created by God, and they viewed all life forms as created by God. That's what the Bible says, and that man is created in God's image with a purpose for his life. And a young person today, you know, will still hear those things if they go to church, a Bible-believing church, or read the Bible. But the problem is now they go to the public school classroom and they're told that all life forms are not created by God. They actually just happened by chance in an ancient slime. Mm-hmm. And the heavens and the earth weren't created by God. They were created by the naturalistic event called the Big Bang. And we ourselves are not created in God's image. We just evolved from these ape-like creatures through natural selection and survival of the fittest. This is completely contrary to what we read in the Bible. And because it is now taught as dogma itself in schools and has been for many, many decades now, it's changed the way we look at God. It's changed the way we look at ourselves. And let me take myself as an example. I was not raised as a Christian, but I did not grow up with a particular hostility towards Christianity in my childhood. Until I got to the sixth grade and they were teaching us evolution, and one of my little classmates who was a Christian raised a hand and objected and said, that's not what the Bible teaches. And my teacher just looked at the little girl with pity in his eyes, and he said, well, I'm sorry, dear, but science has proven that the Bible's wrong. And all my classmates chimed in and said, yeah, science has proven the Bible's wrong. Where have you been, you know? So I thought, oh, I'm wised up now, you know, there's no such thing as God. He's like the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus. He's one of those old myths. And I pretty quickly went down the road of being an atheist, and I became a hippie. And you'll notice that left-wing politics kind of go hand in hand with atheism. You don't find too many people who are conservative in their social outlook, let's say, who are also atheists, you know. So it definitely helps define a political direction. But it wasn't just me. When I give PowerPoints on this, I give a whole bunch of examples, and I want to give some here. There was a guy in the news a few years ago named Daryl Lambert, and he was in the Boy Scouts, and he was threatened with expulsion from the Boy Scouts because he said he didn't believe in God. And why didn't he believe in God? I'll give you the exact statement he gave to the press. He said, quote, I'm an atheist, I believe in evolution, unquote, Daryl Lambert. So the same thing that happened to me happened to him. He was taught evolution, and he thought that it proved that we didn't have our creator God, and he became an atheist. And then next thing I quote a Harvard professor, E.L. Wilson. He says, quote, as were many persons from Alabama, I was a born-again Christian. When I was 15, I entered the Southern Baptist Church with great fervor and interest in the fundamentalist religion. I left at 17 when I got to the University of Alabama and heard about evolutionary theory, unquote. But, you know, it's not just these recent examples. There's some very significant historical examples we could give. How about Andrew Carnegie, who at one time was said to be wealthier than John D. Rockefeller, a steel magnate, and of course he started the Carnegie Foundation for International Peace, which did a whole lot of bad things. And here's what he wrote in his autobiography, 1920, he said, quote, when I, along with three or four of my boon companions, was in the state of doubt about theology, including the supernatural and the whole scheme of salvation, I came fortunately upon Darwin's works. I remember that light came as in a flood and all was clear. Not only had I got rid of theology and the supernatural, but I'd found the truth of evolution, unquote, Andrew Carnegie. But let me give you one more example. Let's just go from extreme capitalism to extreme communism, which we know often work hand in hand. There was a book published in Moscow in 1940 with a biography of Stalin, who we know is one of the greatest mass murderers of all time. And the book is called Landmarks in the Life of Stalin. And it shows how Stalin changed from a Christian to an atheist. And I'm going to quote exactly from the book. It says, quote, at a very early age, while still a pupil in the ecclesiastical school, Comrade Stalin developed a critical mind and revolutionary sentiments. He began to read Darwin and became an atheist. Jigler Jidze, a boyhood friend of Stalin's, relates, I began to speak of God. Joseph heard me out and after a moment's silence said, you know, they're fooling us, there's no God. I was astonished at these words. I'd never heard anything like it before. How can you say such things, so-so? I exclaimed. I'll lend you a book to read. It'll show you that the world and all living things are quite different from what you imagine. All this talk about God is sheer nonsense, Joseph said. What book is that, I inquired. Darwin, you must read it. Joseph impressed on me. Unquote, Landmarks in the Life of Stalin, 1940. Now, we could go on and on. I should mention that Karl Marx sent the proof sheets for Das Kapital to Charles Darwin and offered to dedicate the book to him, but Darwin declined, saying he had some religious people in his family who might be offended. But Karl Marx actually said this, quote, Darwin's book is very important and serves me as a basis in natural science for the class struggle in history, unquote. And in other words, Marx saw the struggle for existence that Darwin was talking about as a scientific justification for the class struggle. Right. And we could even go into eugenics and Nazism and the fact that Darwin's son, Leonard Darwin, was head of the Eugenics Education Society in England. We know the negative impact of eugenics in the last century. And Darwin himself wrote in his book, The Descent of Man, quote, except in the case of man himself, hardly anyone is so ignorant as to allow his worst animals to breed, unquote. He's saying that we should not allow our worst animals, meaning our worst people, to breed. I could go on and on, but what I'm trying to establish here, J.D., is this is not just some science theory. It's had just an incredible impact on man, his view of himself, our culture, politics, and the way things are run in Western civilization over the last century. So this is a relevant theory to discuss.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can look right at the slippery slope that we're on, because if you remove – here's what I think a lot of people just don't get. And we start talking about God and people want to, you know, get bash on the Bible and how – it's really not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about an agenda to remove from our minds the concept of divine rights. We're not talking about divine rights that come from specifically the God of the Bible or wherever. We're talking about your rights to be inherently protected in your person because of things like morality. And so you remove God from the equation, and then you remove morality, and then you remove the rule of law. It's a very quick, easy, simple, slippery slope that we're on. We could talk about Alla Dask and his discovery of the man or other animals legislation that's all over the country at this point. Started, I think, with the FDA, where they basically say, because of this Darwin theory, that we are animals and therefore are not necessarily of God. We're not able to have those divine rights. I mean, do you see the slippery slope? Do you agree with me on that, James?
Oh, absolutely. If people are cattle, you can treat them like cattle and put them in cattle cars for FEMA camps. And that's been done over the past century in other countries. And, of course, we, many of your, most of your listeners know we're in peril of that kind of situation approaching now. And Will Durant would agree with you. Will Durant, the famed historian, said near the end of his life, April 1980, he said, quote, "By offering evolution in place of God as a cause of history, Darwin removed the theological basis of the moral code of Christendom, and the moral code that has no fear of God is very shaky. That's the condition we're in," mm-hmm. unquote. But, you know, Darwin himself looked on this not primarily as science. He looked on it as an attack on the Bible. And I'm going to just quote from what Darwin himself said in a letter to a friend in 1873. He said, quote, he's mentioning Charles Lyell, who's a close friend of his, was a geologist who said that the Earth was billions of years old. And he mentions the deluge, which, of course, is a reference to the biblical flood. But here's what Darwin said, 1873, quote, "Lyell is most firmly convinced that he's shaken the faith in the deluge far more efficiently by never having said a word against the Bible than if he'd acted otherwise. I've recently read Morley's Life of Voltaire, and he insists strongly that direct attacks on Christianity, even when written with a wonderful force and vigor of Voltaire, produce little permanent effect. Real good seems only to follow the slow and silent side attacks," unquote, Charles Darwin. So here you see Darwin is describing his own work as a slow and silent side attack on the Bible. You see, in Victorian culture back in the 1800s, you couldn't just come out and say the Bible is wrong, you'd offend too many people. So what Darwin did was something pretty sly. He simply introduced something which said, hey, we all evolved from slime and from apes, and science proves this, without actually directly attacking the Bible. And he knew that by doing this, or I should say his controllers knew by doing this, that they would introduce doubts into people's minds about the Bible without necessarily taking it on directly.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about Mr. Darwin. Who was this guy? How did he have so much power? What kind of background does this guy actually have?
Well, Darwin is an interesting case. He actually did not have, he was not a doctor, and he actually had no degree in the sciences. His only degree was actually in theology. He had worked as a young man on the ship, the Beagle, on his famous cruise to the Galapagos Islands, and he is said to have developed a theory of natural selection there because he saw variations in the finches on the islands. And of course, there is variation in nature. There's no question about that. And God made animals in such a way that they could adapt to their environment, to changing conditions. You know, if you get a colder climate, bears may be able to develop a thicker coat of fur. But Darwin made the mistake of thinking that there's unlimited adaptation, that is to say that a fish could adapt all the way into a human being, but that's not the way God did it. Animals reproduce after their own kind, and there's variation within their types. But he's interesting, and one of the things that really floored me about him was something that I read. You might recall, you know, the last show we did, J.D., was on vaccines.
Right.
And I read in there a quote from the Protocols of Learned Elders of Zion, which is a whole different topic, but is absolutely amazing when you see the predictive value they have. We talked about how they were talking about using the inoculation of diseases to distress humanity,
right,
which is really of interest to the growing awareness among people that vaccines are actually a tool of genocide. They introduce a whole assortment of autoimmune diseases. We talked about Alzheimer's and ADHD and autism on the last show you and I did together. But there's also a quote in here which amazed me. This is in the second chapter of the Protocols. It says this, quote, "For them, meaning the people, let that play the principal part which we have persuaded them to accept as the dictates of science, theory. It is with this object in view that we are constantly, by means of our press, arousing a blind confidence in these theories, which our specialists have cunningly pieced together. The intellectuals will puff themselves up with their knowledge, and without any logical verification of them, will put into effect all the information available from science, which our specialists have cunningly pieced together for the purpose of educating their minds in the direction we want. Mm-hmm. Do not suppose for a moment that these statements are empty words. Think carefully of the success we arranged for Darwinism," unquote. And I was just amazed to read that, J.D., because I'd already written two books on Darwinism, and, you know, the mainstream media claim about the Protocols is that they were invented by the Tsar's police to stir up anti-Semitism in Russia. But why, but as we went over in the last, before, they even talked about in the protocols about giving the president executive order privileges to override the Constitution. They didn't even have a president in Russia in 1903.
Right.
And Charles Darwin was not a controversial figure to the peasants of Russia in 1903. There's no reason for them to do this if they're trying to stir up anti-Semitism to talk about Charles Darwin. So what I found interesting about this was that Charles Darwin, after he worked on the Beagle, he basically didn't work, and he spent his life on a very elegant British estate on a manor. He had as many as 8 servants, but he didn't make that much money from his books. He got an inheritance from his father, but if you look at his biographer, it turns out that he made his money in stocks, and it's quite remarkable that this guy who was a biologist made all this money in the stock market. He obviously had some advice, some help along the way.
Right. Is there a nexus between him and Freud and Bernays as well? Because you brought up stock market, now I'm thinking, well, if this guy knew enough that he, you know, was working with Freud and could come up with some kind of pre-PR scheme, investing schemes, that would be a good way to get some money, I guess. But I'm just curious.
Well, all of these men, Bernays, Freud, and Darwin, were instrumental in changing the mindset of people in a direction that was not in people's best interests, in changing the way that people look on themselves, look on morality. So they're all part of that that network, that Illuminati network, which is, you know, the more we learn about it, JD, the more we learn just how broad it is. Mm-hmm. For Darwin, it was essentially to discredit the idea of God, because when you make God an old myth, when you say that, when you replace God as creator with this so-called scientific theory of evolution, if the Bible's an old myth, then the Ten Commandments are an old myth. For the Illuminati, this was very useful, because for banksters, if they've been raised from their childhood to believe there's no God and the Ten Commandments don't matter, then they can steal money from the middle class, because there's no force to the commandment that thou shalt not steal. For military, or for law enforcement, there's no real barrier to killing people, because the commandment, thou shalt not kill, has no force. It's just part of an old myth called the Bible. For politicians and for even for CNN news anchors, there's no barrier to lying to people, because the commandment to not bear false witness has no force. Do you see how useful this was to the Illuminati to do what Darwin himself called a slow and silent side attack on the Bible?
Yeah, it's remarkable. What really gets me about it is that we had, L.C. Vincent was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about essentially the Rothschild dynasty deciding to change the tuning of what we consider to be A, which normally in nature would be 432 to 440, and then using their, cohorts worldwide to essentially establish bad musical frequencies. And it's what I like about that topic is that it's so subtle. It's one of those little tiny subtle changes that was global. It did have an agenda behind it. It is potentially hurting us and causing an effect on everybody around the planet at the same time, and nobody talks about it. And it's another one of those framework type situations where you're using a certain framework that was established, this 440 framework, and then you get bands like Nickelback because you don't know any better. And so again, looking at this framework of Darwinism is so important to understand how the removal of just the concept of God, just the concept of divine rights, just the idea that you were created with the right to be protected in yourself, the fact that you can remove that legislatively as a sneaky thing the way Darwin did and then move it into legislation the way Alaska has discovered it has been. I mean, this is a big deal, James. This is a really, really big deal and a really slippery slope that we're on here. And I'm really glad that we decided to bring it up today, because I think that there's a lot more here. But I do want to talk a little bit about kind of the opposite side of the coin. You know, the people out there who say, well, this is a scientific testable theory. You know, this is something that we see all the time. So is there a difference between the evolution or the evolutionary evidence that we see done in experimentation today on a small scale versus the grander theory of Darwinism? Like, how do we divide between, you know, because we know that viruses mutate and evolve. They have a gestation period of like a nanosecond, so we can watch evolution happening on that type of scale. But is that evolution? Is that the same type of evolution that Darwin was talking about? And how do we, you know, how do we make a divide between those things, James?
Well, that is the next phase we want to move into, because I wanted to start, as we said, by establishing the relevance of this theory, why it is socially relevant to know about. But the second step is exactly that. We need to talk about the scientific evidence against this theory, because many people, if you talk to them, they'll say, well, if you don't believe in evolution, you must have been born in a barn.
Right.
Hey, all scientists accept it. You know, it's as well proven as the laws of gravity. You probably think the earth is flat, et cetera, right? But actually, scientifically, the theory of evolution is a house of cards. And if we have time today, I actually want to go over four major areas of evidence that show the theory of evolution is wrong.
Okay.
Scientifically.
I'm going to interrupt you then, because we are going to get ready to go to a break here really quick. And I want to talk for a second though, just because we've only got a few minutes. And, you know, this idea that, that there's this division between science and God. I think that the more I study, especially in the last 10 years, it seems to me that the study of science is starting to show without a doubt that there is some sort of force out there that we don't understand. And I'm glad that you brought up gravity, because gravity is only one of these things that people say, well, you know, gravity exists and we can't. And that's the exact perfect point to bring up, right? We believe in gravity. Everybody believes in gravity. We can see the effects of gravity. It's going on all the time. But if you talk to a particle physicist and you say, hey, what's the force carrier for gravity? They're not going to know. It's 2015 right now, and we cannot mathematically predict or actually figure out what the force carrier of gravity is. And a lot of these evolutionary people out there that believe in evolution are going to look at that and say, well, you know, just because we can't find a force carrier doesn't mean we can't infer that something is going on. And if you look at like the way that they break out the branches of the trees for the animal species, you know, we're essentially making inferences. There aren't a lot of fossil evidence to clearly show that particular step, but we're in that gray area where we're saying, you know, that we think it started here, and then now at the tip of the tree we're seeing this particular animal now, and we're going to infer that that's what's going on. So that's what I really want to focus on. I know we're going to talk about the four major kind of scientific exclusions to Darwinism, but I want to try and keep the idea of gravity in effect in our minds as well, just because it's something that everybody knows about, but at the same time, it's not something that we can prove. What do you think about that, James?
Well, yes, I wanted to draw attention to the distinction. How much time do we have before the break?
30 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, we'll draw attention to the distinction between gravity and the type of ideas that Darwin is presenting. But just to give people a clue, we're talking about the distinction between things that are measurable right now in present time in a lab. That is science, as opposed to Darwinism, which is talking about conjectures about what things people believe happened millions of years ago. Two very, very different types of science.
Very important. Okay. We're going to go to this quick 3-minute break, James, as long as we start hearing some bumper music. And appreciate you being here. I'm definitely enjoying this conversation. It looks like people in the chat room are as well. So we're going to go to this 3-minute break. We come back, we're going to talk about the science of Darwinism and actually try and figure out what the difference is between the science that we're being told is real and the science that we can actually see in a laboratory. So keep it right here, guys. We've got a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio, news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. 910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods. But what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye, Tuesday through Friday,
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. James Perloff is our very special guest today, and we're having a discussion about Darwinism, which may seem like it's kind of a boring discussion to be having, but I'll tell you what, this Darwinism thing is a slippery slope, and it is a framework that we absolutely need to step back and examine once in a while. You know, the process of being a human being is that of continual improvement, and it's by doing exactly what we're doing today. You have to step back and you have to say, why am I thinking the things that I am thinking? Not necessarily what am I thinking, but why is there a larger field of influence at play here that's making me think these things? And I think Darwinism kind of falls into that category. So before the break, James, we were talking about some of the scientific constraints to the theory of Darwinism. Before we jump back into that, I do want to recommend that people go to jamesperloff.com. James Perloff with two F's .com, and you can find all of his books there. Again, Truth is a Lonely Warrior. If you're a study or a student of history and want to find out just about everything that's going on with the collusion between the bankers and how we're getting into these global wars, that Truth is a Lonely Warrior is a book that I cannot recommend enough. Shadows of Power, same thing. And right now, today, we're talking about Tornado in a Junkyard and The Case Against Darwin, both also available at jamesperloff.com. James, you want to pick up the conversation where we were in terms of the scientific constraints to the theory of Darwinism, sir?
Yeah, we started out by talking about the relevance of the theory, and now we want to talk about why the theory is scientifically incorrect. And the best thing to do, J.D., really would be to take 1 minute just to recapitulate what the theory says. I mean, it's taught a little differently from one school of thought to another, but essentially the theory of evolution says that life began in the ocean when the right chemicals formed a single-celled ancestor, as it's been taught for a long time, since the days of Darwin. And then the single-celled creatures began to evolve. They became multicellular. They evolved into invertebrates in the ocean, meaning creatures without a backbone, like a jellyfish. And then the invertebrates evolved into the fish, which had a backbone. And then fish yearned to come on shore, and they started evolving little legs. Their fins turned into legs, and they became the first amphibians, which are, of course, the creatures that can go on land or sea, like a frog. Mm-hmm. And then amphibians evolved into reptiles. Reptiles evolved into mammals, and mammals ultimately evolved into people. And that's the theory of evolution in a nutshell. So to take it apart, we should really start at the beginning. Is it possible that chemicals could form a living cell? You know, Darwin talked about this in his book, The Origin of Species, and he speculated on how, in a, what he called a warm little pond, certain chemicals, which he speculated on what the chemicals were, formed this first cell. And in his day, that might have been relatively justifiable because in those days they thought that cells were simple. But now we know that cells are anything but simple. I'll give you a quote. Quote, a simple one-celled bacterium or coli contains DNA information units that are the equivalent in pages of Encyclopedia Britannica, unquote. Oh. That quote is from the Encyclopedia Britannica. Cells are not simple. Cells consist of proteins, essentially proteins, and even a simple so-called simple bacterial cell has thousands of different proteins. And not to sound technical again, but proteins are found in a smaller building block called amino acids, and you normally find hundreds of amino acids in a protein, and they usually have to be in the exact order. Now, this may be hard to visualize, but just to give an example of that, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard of a disease called sickle cell anemia. Mm-hmm. It's caused by a mutation in the hemoglobin protein, which consists of 287 amino acids in two chains called alpha and beta. You get sickle cell anemia when the wrong amino acid gets substituted at position 6 of the beta chain. Even though the other 286 amino acids are perfectly assembled, that one substitution gives you that dread disease. So life is perfectly assembled. Now, Francis Crick, who co-won the Nobel Prize for co-discovering the structure of DNA, estimated the odds of getting one protein by chance. he estimated the odds are 1 in 10 to the power of 260.
Oh, wow.
That is a 1 with 260 zeros after of it. A mathematician would say that is mathematically impossible. You couldn't fit that many electrons in the known universe. That's the odds against getting one protein, let alone the thousands a bacterium or a single-celled ancestor would need. Plus, a single-celled ancestor would need the ability to ingest nutrients and expel wastes, what came first. It needs the genetic code to run itself. It needs translation devices, which translate the genetic codes, which came first. The translator of the code wouldn't make sense for either one to come first. They all had to be there at the beginning. And think about this, J.D. This first cell of Darwin's, if it came about by chance, before it died in the span of one lifetime, it would have had to perfect the process of cellular reproduction.
Right.
Because if it didn't, there never would have been a second cell. This is mathematically impossible. It's absolutely astronomically impossible. Plus, there are no observations to support it. You know, there's no scientific observations to show that dead chemicals will assemble themselves into functional machines. That it's not observed. So it's not scientific. It's mathematically impossible. And so phase one of Darwin's theory is dead right there.
Hmm. Okay. That seems pretty cut and dry.
Okay, we move on to step two. Okay, so Darwin said that we went, you know, from bacterium to invertebrate to fish to amphibian to reptile and so forth. Now, Darwin thought this all happened by environmental adaptation, natural selection, environmental adaptation. Here's what he said about it in The Origin of Species. He said, quote, "By this process, meaning natural selection, long continued, it seems to be almost certain that an ordinary hoofed quadruped, four-footed creature, might be converted into a giraffe," unquote. Quadruped, four-footed creature. So he's saying any four-footed hoofed creature like a donkey, you can make it a giraffe or you put it in the right environment. But that's not true because Darwin didn't know about genes. You know, you can't be anything physically your genes won't allow you to be. You can't have blonde hair unless you've got genes for blonde hair. Right. You could put donkeys in the African jungle after a million years, they will still be donkeys. They will not be giraffes because they haven't got giraffe genes.
And well, they probably can't outrun a lion either. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So the problem that Darwin has faced with the discovery of genetics, which was a science not known to Darwin during most of his career, was how did the fish get the genes to become a human being if a fish really became a man over time? and just stumped them for a long time. But finally they came up with the idea that it was random mutations.
Okay.
And so that, you know, they said, well, you know, some fish got a random mutation to get a little bit of a leg, you know, and then it just was adapted because it's so poor survival, and then it got another random mutation. But the problem is we now know that these random mutations do not add function or information to the genome, to the genetic makeup. And a very important book on this is, a book by Dr. Lee Spetner called Not by Chance, Shattering the Modern Theory of Evolution. He taught information theory for years at Johns Hopkins and at the Weizmann Institute. Here's what he writes in his book, Not by Chance, quote, "In all the reading I've done in life sciences literature, I've never found a mutation that added information. All point mutations, that's the most basic type of mutation, that have been studied on the molecular level turn out to reduce genetic information and not increase it," unquote, Dr. Spetner. Now, what do we see mutations cause in human beings, JD? We see them cause sickle cell anemia, cystic fibrosis, Down syndrome, hemophilia, and about 4,000 other genetic diseases. They bring you down. Mm-hmm. They take away information. They do not add to it. They're like a typographical error in a book. Could a typographical error in a book improve its information? Possibly. But it's not going to turn a Harry Potter book into the novel Gone with the Wind. It's just, it's not going to make that kind of transformation a mistake in the genetic code.
Right.
And so this whole idea that mutations brought a fish all the way up to being a human being, it simply doesn't work.
Well, you know, my question too would be if you've got some random, genetic mutation that's occurred, how is that going to affect the dating pool? You know what I mean? Like if you've got a series of finches out there and all of a sudden one of them has got two beaks, you know, what are the likelihood that that finch is going to be the one that is selected by its dating pool to continue to breed, you know?
Right. It's probably going to have to find another two-beaked finch to mate with for that mutation to become operational and continue through the species, unless it had to be the dominant trait. So, but again, this defies logic, just like the idea that chemicals could form themselves into a living creature. Another one is transitional forms. The theory of evolution says we went from a single-celled creature to invertebrate to fish to amphibian to reptile to mammal to man. So you would have to have a whole bunch of transitional or intermediate forms between these types. If you take, for example, from a fish to an amphibian, well, for a fish to develop legs, it wouldn't have to just evolve bones. It would have to evolve new muscles. It would have to evolve new nerves to control those muscles and bones. And while it's coming on shore, it'd have to evolve a whole new breathing system. And since, according to evolutionists, it's happened by random mutation, this would be a very slow and long process. You'd have to have countless millions of creatures living and dying during the trial and error stage. But if you look at the world around us, JD, we see tens of thousands of species within bacteria, within invertebrates, fish, amphibians, reptiles, and mammals. How many species are there intermediate between them? There's not one. There's not one species. Every one of them belongs to one of those. And so where do they all go? Well, according to evolutionists, they became extinct. Well, that's just an excuse for no evidence. It's like saying my dog ate the homework. It's like me saying, you know what, JD, 10,000 alien spacecraft landed in my town last night. And you say, well, wow, that's amazing. Where's the evidence? Well, you know, before we woke up, they all went away.
Right.
And you say, well, tell me if you got some evidence. I say, no, I haven't got any evidence. And so that is a major blow also, the lack of intermediate forms. Some of these should have survived throughout the world, but they aren't there. Actually, the science that classifies the living world is called taxonomy, and the man who developed that, who pioneered it, was named Carolus Linnaeus. He's the one who started calling animals by species and genus and class and order, and that's the system we use today with some modifications. He was a creationist and did not believe in evolution, one reason being not only that he was a Christian, but he saw that the living world is divided into these distinct divisions and they haven't got any overlaps. So the lack of transitional forms is another big blow for the theory of evolution. We're talking about science and observation here. We're not talking about religious dogma or because
right.
the Bible told
okay,
me so.
I gotta stop for just a sec because someone is asking in the chat room to comment about lungfish. Is that something that could be an example of an intermediary? And then also, what in the heck is up with the platypus? Just saying.
Yeah, those are things that are the two examples have been given that seem to have some characteristics that are shared between two, but they've never been classified as in between.
Okay.
The lungfish has a special heart. And the platypus is a really weird creature. It's got webbed feet. It's classed as a mammal. It's got fur. It's got a duck-type bill. But Stephen Jay Gould, who was a leading evolutionist in America, never called it an intermediate form. He called it, his word for it was a curious mosaic. And it's almost a joke by God. There are certainly no lines of evolution that show what the transitional forms. And all of these, in both the lungfish and the platypus, their features are fully either fish or fully mammalian or fully amphibian. And those are just two examples. And, you know, again, for Darwin's theory to be true, you would have to have just this massive number of intermediates to prove the theory.
Okay. Well, and I got to stop you.
Those are very rare exceptions. You need more than a rare exception for this theory to be true. You have to. In fact, let me quote what Darwin said. He said in The Origin of Species, he said this quote: "The number of intermediate and transitional links between all living and extinct species must have been inconceivably great. But assuredly, if this theory be true, such have lived upon the earth." Unquote. So we need more than just a couple of rare creatures.
Well, and you think too with the agenda. You know, I'm again, this is conjecture, but I'm of the opinion that there are probably hundreds of thousands of super big skeletons that have been discovered across the planet, and the Smithsonian has covered all of them up. And so I would think that the Smithsonian would be part of this agenda to forward the idea of Darwinism. And then I would also think, since they took so much care in hiding the idea of giants, you know, existing amongst us, that wouldn't they also at the same time really want to bolster Darwin's theory by putting out as many of these fossils that would show, you know, the transitionary periods as they possibly could have? Wouldn't that be part of their agenda? And why don't, and I think it's important that you're noting that we don't really see that, you know?
Right. I'd like to bring up a quote from a Harvard professor on that very thing you're talking about. His name was Ernest Albert Hooton. And but the Smithsonian, so I'm looking at my book, I have more than one quote from this guy.
No problem.
It took me just a second here. He talks about the banishing of these skulls by the Smithsonian.
Well, and they're still being found all over the place. We have an L.A. Marzulli on, and they're still pulling elongated skulls out of Paracas, out of Peru, you know. So, I mean, the idea that these things weren't around, and I think that's another, you know, big issue that we should talk about. Like, all of the existence or all of the archaeological evidence that exists that doesn't ever come up in any of these types of discussion, all the other hidden types of things that they're trying to keep suppressed, you know.
Right. Well, I'm having trouble finding that quote, and I don't want to take up the time with it, but I'm glad you mentioned L.A. Marzulli. And one of the reasons the quote was basically to the effect that many skeletons have been banished to closets because they didn't fit the evolutionary paradigm. But Marzulli, of course, did find these elongated skulls and large skulls, which flew in the face, of course, of evolutionary theory, which said that we evolved from these tiny creatures that eventually evolved and became upright. And so the idea that there would be giants in the land, which of course are referred to in the Bible as Nephilim, and I certainly believe that Marzulli is right about that. Long before I heard of Marzulli, I was acquainted with a paleontologist named Joe Taylor who had unearthed some of these gigantic bones, human bones, of the past. And these are the types that were banished by the Smithsonian, which is certainly there as part of this all-controlling agenda we see taking place. This is, Darwinism is just part of it. You know, banking is part of it. War is a part of it.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to talk about Darwin today, because again, I think this is just one of those topics that people don't talk about or don't have as much of an understanding as they possibly should. So are we still working on the scientific? I think we had covered three of the big bullet points, have we not?
Let's do one more bullet point, and that one is called irreducible complexity. Sounds like a mouthful, but not too hard to understand. It was introduced by Dr. Michael Behe, who's a biochemist at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania. He wrote a book called Darwin's Black Box. And he talked about the fact that there are certain systems within human beings and other animals, other creatures that are very complex and consist of interdependent parts, and if you break it down, they won't function, and therefore they cannot have evolved. So let me just, that still sounds very abstract, so let me just fill that in. He gave us some examples such as blood clotting. Now, if you get a cut, your bleeding will stop eventually by your body forming a blood clot. Okay. And to the naked eye, a blood clot might look simple, but to a biochemist, it's a very complex process. It takes well over a dozen steps to form a blood clot. Now, how would blood clotting have come about? In the Darwinian model, they would say, well, you know, step by step over eons of time, random mutations introduce each step. You know, that doesn't work. Because if you have 3 steps, you'll bleed to death. 6 steps, you'll bleed to death. 9 steps, you'll bleed to death. You know, a person with the disease hemophilia is missing just 1 step. They're at high risk of bleeding. If you're missing 2 or 3 steps, you'll bleed to death. So the question Behe asks is, how could this have evolved step by step? Because the creatures would bleed to death and they would die. The whole system had to be working at the very beginning. I mean, just one more example that he gives of that, the human immune system. Now, if you get an infection, your immune system swings into action, but it's all complex and interdependent. For example, or when you get bacterium, antibodies will attach themselves to the bacterium. Now, those antibodies are not strong enough to destroy the bacterium, but they act as identifiers for other parts of the immune system, namely the white blood cells, which come to the site and using the antibodies will identify and attack that bacterium. So Behe asked the question, okay, which came first if Darwin's theory is true? Was it the antibodies? Can't be them because they're not strong enough to destroy the bacteria. But why would nature evolve the white blood cells before there were any identifiers? It doesn't make sense. If the immune system evolved over millions of years, creatures would have been wiped out by disease before it got perfected. It doesn't make sense. The system is irreducibly complex. And he gives many more examples like that, and evolution has no answer for it. So that's yet another example of science. That we're putting straight science here, that these things cannot have come about by chance. These things did not evolve. They didn't come from an ancient slime. They're there as a result of an intelligent design. You take a Coke can and tell people it came about by chance. That's crazy. Look at the printing on there. Look at the perfect shape of the metal. Look at the tab that pops open. Somebody designed it. Well, that's the principle of design proves a designer. How much more so for living creatures, which are astronomically more complex than a Coke can?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that I always come back to is that I've been looking a lot into metaphysics recently, just studying stuff like that. And, you know, one of the things that science has really proven a lot in the last 100 years is that direct observation changes the results of experimentation. That by actively involving yourself in any kind of experiment, you are part of the process. You are, you know, when you look at light, sometimes it's a wave, sometimes it's a particle. It depends on the observer. And so the idea of coming back to this whole intelligent design idea, I was always struck by the idea that there's either going to be, I take, for example, the moon, okay? The moon, we all see it, it exists out there, but when it's on the other side of the planet, you know, I'm not looking at it, but I know that it's still there. So it kind of comes down to me where I know for a fact that science has shown that there has to be an observer. There has to be an observer for things to be in existence. And so when you think about the moon and the fact that we are all either collectively engaged in being that observer, and that's what allows the moon to exist in all of our lives as it travels around the world, or that there is an exterior observer that's watching everything, and then we get into that intelligent design thing. But I think, again, the more science that I study, the more it's starting to show me for sure that there is an observer, that there is something out there watching, and that's just standard, you know, normal physical science stuff. What do you think about that, James?
Well, I think you're right. As you were saying that, it's also reminding me about the old thing about what is the sound of one hand clapping, and, you know, if a tree fell in the forest, would it make a sound? There's no one there to hear it. Seriously, yes, there is definitely a world out there which is objective, which I think it definitely renders itself to the dictates of observation. But sometimes those have been shown historically to have limits. That, as you know, one phase of physics gives way over to, you know, Newtonian physics, over to Einsteinian physics, that type of thing. So science is a process. But what I've been trying to show today is that Darwinism is very fallacious. You know, that this one of the distinctions I wanted to make, and this is something we're talking at the bottom of the first half hour, was the distinction between physics in chemistry and evolution, you know, with chemistry, there's a law that water will boil at 100 degrees centigrade, and you can test that 100 times, it'll always prove true. And if I had a theory that water will boil at 80 degrees centigrade, you could easily disprove my theory. Just warm up water to 80 degrees, it's not going to boil. But if you compare that to the claims of Darwinism, Charles Darwin, for example, said that the reason we have so little body hair is because our ape ancestors preferred mates with less hair. Well, how do you disprove that?
Right.
To prove is an idea about something that happened millions of years ago. It cannot be tested. It cannot be observed. And that is the essential distinction I want to make here. When they talk about Darwin's theory being like the laws of gravity, that's not correct. The laws of gravity, you can drop a pencil, it's going to drop in front of you, you can see gravity right now. That is quite different from things that happened millions of years ago, which you cannot test, which you cannot observe.
That makes sense. Okay, so we've got about 3.5 minutes left, James. I'm wondering if there's anything else that we need to cover today just to make sure we have driven this point home, that maybe we do need to take a step back and really examine this whole theory of Darwin thing.
No, I think we've done it. We've touched on the fact that, number one, it's socially relevant, and number two, there's plenty of room for doubt, more than enough room for doubt. And if people go to my website, jamesperloff.com, go to the links page near the top, you'll see some links to some great intelligent design and creation websites, such as Creation Research Society, True Origins, Answers in Genesis, and so forth, where they can get more information. Of course, my books, Tornado in a Junkyard, The Case Against Darwin, the only difference between those, Tornado in Junkyard is in-depth, and The Case Against Darwin is very short. You can read it in about a minute.
Right.
But this is just one phase of the whole Illuminati plan. You know, you and I have not talked about it before, but it's something that I found, because it turned me into an atheist, and affected my, the way it turned me into a hippie and an atheist, and the way I lived my life for many years, and many of my contemporaries, I knew that it was relevant, especially as I discovered the Illuminati links to Charles Darwin and people around him like the Huxleys.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got one final question for you coming out of the chat room real quick. People are wondering about your perspective on scientists potentially deliberately changing genetic modified food or anything like that to try and have an effect on us right now. Do you feel like that's something that we need to be aware of coming down the pike here?
Oh, absolutely. It's like we talked about vaccines, trying to change the biology of man. Genetically, you never want to mess with the way the designer did it, the original designer, God. And genetically modified foods definitely designed to implement a plan of population control, just like vaccines, just like weather control, and just like war.
Well, good news, I guess, huh? If you guys want any more insight on that, I have to highly recommend a show on BBC. I think it was on BBC4 called Utopia. It was out for 2 seasons last year, and it talks about exactly what we're talking about, the idea of introducing genetically modified food to the organisms on the planet and seeing what happens and some of the agenda that goes along with that. James, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today. This has been a very insightful conversation, my friend.
Well, thank you, J.D. It's a delight, and I look forward to coming back to talk about some more geopolitical topics.
Well, I'm sure we'll have no shortage just paying attention to what's going on in the world. It doesn't seem like we're going to be out of this mess anytime soon. So I will wish you a good day, and look forward to having you back on the program soon, James.
Thanks so much, J.D.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the program today. Appreciate you guys hanging out with me all day. I really appreciate you guys being in the chat room and throwing the questions over to James. I did my best to kind of steward them across and get through our segues here, but I really appreciate you guys showing up. A lot of good information. I would highly recommend both of James's books, Dealing with Darwinism, Tornado in a Junkyard, Case Against Darwinism. Please go to jamesperloff.com and you can get them there. Tomorrow, Greg Morse is going to be on the program. We're going to be talking about the mortgage crisis again, and because we are not out of the neck of woods on that issue either. So definitely plan on being here tomorrow. I'll plan on being here for you, and I plan on seeing you guys all again in the chat room tomorrow at Truth Frequency Radio. Thank you guys again for being here. We will, we'll do it again tomorrow. Happy Wednesday, guys. Take care and, good luck out there. We'll see you guys later.
Take it away.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.